bad, y'all. It's really bad. Welcome into First Take. And that was real emotion. I'm not a thespian like Stephen A. Smith. That was really how I felt and how I continue to feel. Max, I didn't expect it to be that bad for our New York football Giants. I mean, the O-line, can't play man coverage. I can go on and on, but I'm not the analyst. I'm the host. Marcus Spears, Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith. I'm Molly Karam Rose. I guess I will start with the Steelers. Stephen A., Big Ben. He looked all right. Three TDs. They get it done. They get the win, 26-16. As for the Giants, struggling. Put it kindly. Here's my guy, Saquon.
I got to be better. I got to be better for the team. Got to find a way to get the run game going. That's just how I truly believe. I got to go back and watch film to give you an honest answer. Can't just talk off emotions, but one thing that just pops off in my mind is find a way to get the run game going for this team. I know that's going to be a key part of our success, and I truly believe in it, and I still believe in it. And, just keep grinding at it, keep working at it, and find a way.
Stephen, I'll start with you. And you know what's really the saddest part in all of this? Is I actually had hope. So I'm just going to laugh at myself for a second. Stephen A., what was the bigger headline, Big Ben's return or the Giants' woes?
Well, first of all, Molly, I think the important point is to understand is that you don't have to laugh at yourself. I'll laugh at you. I tried to tell you, Molly. I tried to tell you. All right.
Why
would you laugh at yourself when I am here to do that for you? No need for you to exert that kind of energy. I'm laughing at
everyone.
You because it's not that they lost the game. It's not that they lost the game, Max Kellerman, because you know, don't hide in the closet like you suddenly ain't some Giants fan. Oh, no. Come on out. You too, Max. All right. I told y'all yesterday, without Pastor Spears in attendance, because I didn't need his help in this matter, I told y'all Saquon Barkley would be neutralized. Did I not say that? I believe I said it, because I was sitting here when I said it. I told you that brother would not have a big day, because to me, that's the story. That's the story. I understand that Big Ben looked good, and he's back, and Juju Smith-Schuster, and James Washington, and Deontay Johnson, and these boys, and Eric Ebron. They're ecstatic that they've got a first-string quarterback, let alone a two-time Super Bowl champion, and a future Hall of Famer quarterback for them, instead of some third or fourth string like they were saddled with last year. But the real thing that resonated with me was 15 carries for 6 yards. By the way, 8 of those carries were for minus yards. They were for negative yards. Talk about being completely neutralized. I tried to tell y'all this defense, that one that even Max acknowledged over the last few months, but suddenly engaged in selective amnesia yesterday when it came to thinking about the Giants and Saquon Barkley. This is what I tried to tell you, okay? The Steelers defense is no joke. I don't think that, again, their secondary to me sometimes is suspect because they got a bunch of short dudes in that secondary, but they've got speed, they've got athleticism, they tackle well, they got a front seven that can get it done, especially their linebacking core. The bottom line is Saquon Barkley was not going to get off. And when you combine that with the fact that Daniel Jones has not had Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard, along with this kid right here, Darius Slayton, who I think's got some talent. And by the way, him and Daniel Jones seems to have some chemistry thing going on there. The fact is, when you look at that along with Ingram, the New York Giants and Daniel Jones has not had all of his weapons available to him. I think even Jason Garrett called a good game. But in the end, it came down to Saquon Barkley and what he was going to do. And if they didn't let Saquon Barkley beat them, they were not going to lose this game. That is what happened. It is what I told you would happen. You didn't want to listen because you put on your pom-poms, Molly. You put on your pom-poms. Max even went and got a
haircut. Called loyalty.
Did y'all notice that yesterday? Max had a nice crew. Max had a nice crew cut from the 1980s going on there. You understand? Molly was sitting there in her Giants blue, acting like y'all were going to do something. And what happened? What I told y'all
was gonna happen.
Next time.
Disappointment happened.
Next time, you'll know better. There you go. Take it away, Max. Floor's yours.
First of all, Darius Slayton's good. We know that. The Giants have believed they had a number one receiver in him since last year. I think they're probably right. Yes, yesterday was about Saquon Barkley. It was about Saquon Barkley. If you get tackled behind the line of scrimmage 11 times, you get contacted as soon as you touch the ball behind the line of scrimmage 11 times, those aren't tackles for losses. Those are sacks. Saquon Barkley was getting sacked. It's one thing to stack the box, and I thought Saquon was going to have a big game because you can use him in the run and the pass game. But it's one thing to stack the box. It's another thing to send all 11 guys on every play toward the running back. I don't think I can remember ever seeing that kind of defensive attention to one running back. That was unbelievable and a great job by the Steelers. Now, it lets Daniel Jones, it gives him opportunities. It gives other players the chance to get open. And by the way, Daniel Jones was doing a pretty good job of that early in the game, but he made the kind of critical judgment errors that I blame Carson Wentz for still making. Of course, the difference is Wentz is in year 5. Daniel Jones is on his rookie deal in year 2. Nevertheless, Daniel Jones' decision-making is the reason they really didn't have a chance in the game as the game wore on. They had a chance to add to their lead on one drive, and T.J. Watt made a great play. But then later on, they're driving down. They're very likely to score a touchdown, and he turns it over instead of just taking the sack or throwing it away. That's poor judgment by a young quarterback. What bothers me about all this is not Saquon not getting the yards, because that means, as I said, there will be other opportunities if you're going to put all 11 guys on the running back. It's not even Daniel Jones making bad decisions in critical moments, because again, he's a second-year quarterback and he showed me other things that I liked. It's the offensive line, and I get Nate Solder opted out. This has been going on now, and they've made improvements last year. Oh, wait a minute, maybe they'll turn a corner. They draft the whole thing. This has been going on now for how many years? It feels like about a decade already. It's enough. They have to fix that. If it's not the pass protection, it's the run blocking. Yesterday, the run blocking was no good. They couldn't get it going on the ground, and that was basically it. Between that and Daniel Jones' decision-making in crunch time, the Giants really didn't have a chance. But I'm not putting this on Saquon Barkley. There's no one who ever lived who's going to pick up a bunch of yards, giving the defensive game plan of the Steelers yesterday, which is every single person on the field, don't let 26 beat you.
I ain't talking about the Giants that much. I mean, did y'all see that defense? That was the same defense last year that almost had the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs with what Stephen A. references, third string, fourth string quarterbacks. Listen, we all know you got to stop Saquon Barkley, and that's your best chance to beat the Giants. But the Giants got to figure something else out. Daniel Jones can't turn the ball over in the red area to the points that you made, Max. The bottom line is this, though. Big Ben is back. This team has new juice. They feel offensively, this defense feels offensively, that all we got to do is make sure we get him the ball enough and we can win games, if not win our division and have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. This Pittsburgh Steelers defense is a problem for every team in the league, Stephen A. It ain't about the Giants being bad. It ain't about Saquon Barkley being a great back and them just stopping him and committing everybody to the box, Max. This defense did this to a lot of people last year. This offense for the Pittsburgh Steelers was scoring 11 points, and they were winning those games. They were winning them. So whether they want to commit to the box, whether they want to stop you from throwing, this defense has showed the propensity to do all of those things in any game that they play. They did a tremendous job last night. And look, we know the Giants ain't world beaters. And Max, to your point, the line of scrimmage got to get better for the Giants, because in the glory days, as much as we want to talk about OBJ and Eli and even dating back to when Brandon Jacobs was there, when I was playing against them, it was the line of scrimmage for the New York Giants that got them to Super Bowls, that won Super Bowls for them. It was a defensive line that could get after the quarterback, the opposing quarterback. Them stacking the box on Saquon ain't have nothing to do with the Giants not being able to apply pressure to Ben. Ben just getting back, was playing nervous. Ben can't move that well, let's be honest. And they could not get to him. They could not sack Ben Roethlisberger. So we got all of these excuses that we gonna create. Let's just give the Steelers their credit and say this defense has been championship level since last year, and now they got a Hall of Fame man quarterback with good receivers that trust him and know he gonna get them the ball. The Steelers are a problem, and the Giants ain't good. That's what it boiled down to.
Well, I don't think it boils down to simply Look, that, Marcus. And the only reason I'll question it is because I know that the Steelers are stout against the run. I have complete confidence in their speed and their athleticism and their tackling ability. But in terms of secondary, when you can throw the football, I have seen too many plays given up. Now, Micah Fitzpatrick arrived, and they had definitely elevated their pass defense. No doubt about that, because the brother is special, and I get all of that. But the flip side to it is that when you beat the Steelers, if you really, really pay attention, Marcus, to who beats the Steelers, it's usually people who can throw the football. They don't get run over. You don't beat the Steelers with a running game.
No doubt.
You beat them throwing the football. So, again, because Daniel Jones was a bit compromised in terms of the weapons he didn't have available to him. I'm not saying you're wrong about the Steelers' defense. I'm saying there's nothing wrong with taking a wait-and-see approach with their pass defense. When Max and I and Molly had Mike Tomlin on the show last year, he joked around with me because I've been getting at him about that pass, that secondary, for years. I've been going, and he checked me a little bit on it to talk about how we're improving, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a fun segment. I'm simply saying that pass, their secondary is usually a question mark. They're usually there, but because they're relatively short,
but since
if
they
you
got,
are somebody
as you mentioned,
that can
Stephen
go up
a.
and get it, it's usually an advantage for you.
As you mentioned, since they got Minkah Fitzpatrick, the defense went from good to excellent. That's what held the season together for them to me without Roethlisberger last year.
Yeah.
If you want to say, do they have a shot at a Super Bowl this year based on what we saw yesterday? I think the answer is yes. Of course, there's going to be some sloppy play this early in the season without a preseason. But given that Tomlin went 8-8 without Big Ben, now he's got Big Ben back looking pretty sharp for a guy who's been off that long. I think you have to say yes. My issue with the Giants is the same now as it's been for years. It's not that they don't invest in the offensive line. High draft picks, big free agent contracts. For years now, they've been trying to address this. Gettleman, the GM, said when he got the job, he was going to address the offensive line. They have not been successful enough at it. It has gotten better, but not good enough. No pass protection. Then pass protection, no run blocking. They must listen, Swagoo, as you mentioned. That's how the Giants have always won. You know, defense, yes. But always. Bill Parcells with his hogs up front, right? Always offensive line, even with the Eli teams. Offensive line, this has been going on, Molly, now for over, it feels like a decade. They can't get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me flip this back to the other side. Stephen A., you make a good point. You could throw for a lot of yards in this league. Good defenses give up a lot of yards. But you know what the Steelers don't give up? A lot of touchdowns, which is their calling card. And secondly, now that you have Ben, from a football perspective, you are going to put an immense amount of pressure on the other team to make big plays. And you give this defense an opportunity to know what's coming, this could be the best defense in the NFL. Last year, this defense held it together with glue, with an offense that put pressure on nobody to do anything outside of what they needed to do. Now you telling me Ben could possibly give you high 20s to 30 points a game with this offense, and you gonna allow T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree and Cam Hayward and Bush when they blitz him and Minkah Fitzpatrick when they blitz him to tee off? I like those chances for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm. That's my point. You can give up 400 yards passing. You don't give up touchdowns. You remember how good the Patriots was when they won the Super Bowl?
Yep.
Bad defense in the big field to play. You get to that red area, they clamp down.
The
I think they were like number one in the league.
Against
that's who the Pittsburgh Steelers
against
are.
Elite quarterbacks, you can't blitz 29 times. Against elite
you
quarterbacks.
Can't, you Stephen can't, Stephen A., but they
right,
got
Tom
rushers up no. front. They got guys up
I'll
front.
I'll leave you all with this.
I'm telling you. Still is a problem, man.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
To the NFL we go. Tom Brady threw two interceptions in his Bucs debut, one a pick six. In a loss to Drew Brees and the Saints, apparently Bill Belichick never sugarcoated criticism for Brady, and neither is his new coach, Bruce Arians, who was surprised by Tom's performance. The floor is yours, sir.
He looked like Tom Brady in practice all the time, so it's kind of unusual to see that in the ball game because they didn't do the things that we didn't get ready for. Everything they did, we thought we were ready for. He's had it before. I mean, he knows how to bounce back, and he knew he didn't play very well. And it's not what he expects from himself, nor do we expect. So yeah, I wouldn't anticipate him to have a little more grit and a little more determination this week.
All right, that was Arians. Marcus Spears back here with us. Check out Marcus every day on NFL Live 4 Eastern on ESPN for more NFL coverage. Max, I'll start with you. Are you worried about your guy? Because I know you care about Brady so much after week one.
You're exactly right, Molly. And I'm very concerned.
Where's your mic?
You dropped your mic,
your
Matt.
Smith might say.
Again.
Again, the mic fell.
Come on, Max.
Again.
I have to wait for the actual mic drop. That's my fault. So I am very concerned, right, as Stephen A. Smith might say.
It's just showing your inexperience dropping the mic, by the way. It's just showing your inexperience dropping the mic. It shows you never really dropped the mic.
Stephen A., it's like a reflex really now.
Because if you never dropped the mic, you know how to drop the mic. Okay?
Stephen A., your mic never drops. Don't worry about it. Listen.
You know what I'm saying? Listen. I'm very experienced at it. You're not. That's what it is.
All right, let's go.
Stephen A. trying to drop the mic. You think there's glue in his hands. It's not going anywhere. Stephen A., as you might say, my Tom Brady. Of course, I'm concerned about my Tom Brady, everybody. First of all, the head coach has to say after week one that he needs to show more grit and determination. He said that to Tom Brady? Tom Brady needs to show more grit. I guess the coach feels like he needs to motivate him by publicly humiliating him, right? Like, what? Bruce Arians, known as a nice guy, has to publicly humiliate Tom Brady. He feels like it's that desperate that he's got to do that to his quarterback? Well, let's see why. Maybe it's because, for the first time ever, Tom Brady, 43, and Drew Brees, 40, like two post-40 quarterbacks, are playing each other in the NFL, right? Like, that's not supposed to happen because every single rule protects the quarterback. They're much less likely to get injured now than they were once upon a time. And so eventually they are going to fall down the ravine, let's say. And maybe there's some concern about that, that Brady needs the extra motivation because he's ancient. He's 43 years old. Maybe it's some concern because he ain't in the AFC East no more. You know, that's all. P.J. Lossman, whoever he thought he was going to face in the AFC East, you're not going to face Ryan Fitzpatrick every other day like you did in the AFC East. Do you realize the quarterback considered the worst in the division is probably at this moment Teddy Bridgewater, who has won twice as many games as he's lost throughout his NFL career and is still in his physical prime? That's the worst guy. That would be one of the best guys Brady would ever have to face in the AFC East. Not there anymore, no. No, it's Drew Brees and Matt Ryan now. It's a different kind of animal. Not in Bill Belichick's system, right? That's not there anymore. It's not going to be, hey, he's the greatest system quarterback of all time, the system being the Patriot way and Bill Belichick. No. Now he's got to learn new things. Can't blame the weapons. Got weapons everywhere he looks, right? Everywhere he looks. There's weapons. That's what everyone was talking about during the offseason. Oh, my God, Mike Evans and Godwin, and look at all the tight ends. O.J. Howard, people remember what they were saying about him out of college? And you got and you got Gronk, and you got name-brand running backs, and you got a defense? You got all that, and the coach, after day one, has to say out loud about Tom Brady, he needs to show more grit and determination. The only reason you say that is if you feel that dude needs to be motivated. Why did Brady leave Belichick? Is it because he still wanted to prove that he's the guy that Belichick didn't think he was, that it's really more Brady than Belichick, that he wants to win Super Bowls? Is it because Bill Belichick wouldn't let him turn the Patriots into a TB12 infomercial? Bruce Arians felt like he had to publicly humiliate Tom Brady after the first week of the season. Go ahead. Don't be concerned.
Professor Kellerman, you know, sometimes the most excruciating part about listening to you is just the length of having to listen to your drivel. You bring up stuff like fake news or low quality information, and that's exactly what the hell you just gave our audience. Fake news and low quality information. So let me get this straight. You haven't had a preseason game. You haven't had a preseason game. All you've had is practice, okay? You haven't gone against real competition, particularly with these guys, ever, okay? The first time you go up against them, against an opponent, it's against a Super Bowl title contender led by the great Drew Brees with the great Michael Thomas, who added Emmanuel Sanders and just re-signed Alvin Kamara. Sean Payton calling plays. The list goes on and on. And that defense is nothing to sneeze at either. And we're going to sit up here and talk about there's a lot to worry about because Tom Brady had a bad game, his very first game with a coach he had never played for before in his life, an offensive coordinator that never called plays for before in his life. And oh, by the way, Mike Evans had one reception for 2 yards. Do you really think that's going to continue? Mike Evans, for crying out loud. Let's pump the brakes a little bit here. Bruce Arians calling out Tom Brady. Bruce Arians, like, I have no doubt these coaches communicate with each other at least in the offseason once or twice. I'm quite sure Bruce Arians did his homework on Tom Brady. I'm quite sure he's been told what makes him tick, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to pacify him. You don't have to refrain from telling it like it is because he's a man. He can handle it. He can take it. He's been to 9 Super Bowls. He's a 6-time Super Bowl champion, and he did it playing for one of the roughest curmudgeons you'd ever want to meet in your life in Bill Belichick as his head coach. I think he could take what Bruce Arians has to say. I think Bruce Arians knows it, and that's why I don't think there's anything to worry about. It's much ado about nothing. Every Sunday, you're not going up against the New Orleans Saints. You're going to be going up against inferior competition more times than not compared to the New Orleans Saints. This is much ado about nothing. It's one game. They'll be just fine.
Max, I'll be lying to you if I said I had no concern, but the concern is built in the fact that I know they're going to continue to get better and build continuity. This notion that you wait for something bad to happen to Tom Brady so you could just try to flex your chest and talk about him being bad is the craziest thing in the world to me. It's like all of the stuff that happened in football, you waited for Tom Brady to have this situation so you could try to justify all of the foolishness that you done spewed about Tom Brady. It's Belichick's system. Somebody had to execute it, Max. Somebody had to go out there and actually play the game and execute the things that were needed to have success. That was New England. Tampa, to Stephen A's point, listen, I expected them to look better than they look, but I'm not alarmed. We talking about the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. There is no doubt about it that that is Tom Brady. He also is 43. There are some things you can't ask him to do. You can't ask him to throw that pass anymore to the sideline on an out from the opposite hash against Jack Rabbit. That's a bad pass. Don't get me wrong, but don't ask him to do that. Bruce Arians needs to also look at himself in the mirror and ask, what do I need to do? Maybe I should try to get the run game going a little bit more for Tom Brady, who's 43. Maybe him and Mike Evans aren't on the same page yet. When he's going across the middle, he throws a ball, miscommunication. Listen, this is football 101. This is no offseason to that point. This is no preseason games. They're figuring things out on the go. Listen, they are fine. Max, I actually walked away from that game saying Tampa is okay. This is not going to be an issue for them going forward. The talent will show up. Leonard Fournette will be used more. Ronald Jones will be used more. They will create more of a euphoric atmosphere for Tom Brady. And listen, Bruce Arians calling him out, that is coaching. That ain't nothing but a coaching tactic. You know what that's saying? Hey, guys, I'm going to call Tom Brady out. So everybody else, when I say something, you better listen and pay attention. Coaches been doing that since the beginning of the time. They going to continue to do that. Bruce Arians know Tom Brady.
I agree. I like Bruce Arians.
And they signed him for the right reason. Come on, man.
I like Bruce Arians calling him out.
For Tom Brady to have something bad happen for you to say something.
I like Bruce Arians calling him out. I think that's good for the team. But there's the way he called him out. If he said, hey, look, we prepared for this in practice. What happened? Right? And a matter of fact, he walked back. Originally, he said that was Brady. The interception that he threw to Mike Evans was Brady's fault. In fact, then he said he later corrected it and said, no, actually, that was on Mike Evans. So I don't mind that stuff. Guys, it's the fact that he said Brady, hopefully he shows more grit and determination. There's one way of calling a dude out, and there's another way of sticking it to him. Now, I agree, it's to motivate him. Stephen A., you're no doubt right. He knows what makes Brady tick. He's heard. He's done his homework. But damn, he feels like he needs to make him tick like that after week one. We've seen Brady have bad week one performances in the past. The fact that the coach feels like he has to do that already, the fact that you, Marcus Spears, are talking about, you can't ask him to make this professional NFL throw anymore. Why not? Didn't Tom Brady basically tweeted at me last year when he had the radar, 61 miles per hour, what cliff, right? He still has his arm, I thought. I was telling you last year, yes, you can still muscle the ball at an old age, but then you will start to lose accuracy. You'll overthrow guys, underthrow them, miss left, miss right. Brady did all that last year. Missed receivers every which way he could beyond just not having the weapons or not being on the same page. He's getting older. Will he still be a competent quarterback? And does a competent quarterback mean that these dudes will be in contention? I think so. I don't think they're going to win the division, as I said all along. Maybe they could make the playoffs because Brady's still an NFL quarterback, but that's what I mean when I say just the guy. And as far as, oh, he's the GOAT, I've been saying he's the GOAT. For years I've been saying he's the GOAT because he's a great quarterback who had Belichick. If Belichick would have had Drew Brees all those years, we'd be saying Drew Brees is the GOAT. Well, there are lots of guys Belichick would have had that were really great who he would have turned into the GOAT. Now Brady's not with Belichick.
Okay, we heard you. Here's the deal. First of all, it's entirely plausible that Marcus is right on the money and absolutely right when he's talking about if you call out Tom Brady, then you get to call out everyone else with ease because you're holding your $50 million man who's a six-time champion accountable. The man doing that in week one makes it easier for him to coach this team moving forward. And remember, Tampa Bay has a history of coming on late and doing some things positive later on in the season when it's a bit too late. So why not have the urgency early on so when you capitalize on things later on in the season, it'll reach fruition and get you into the postseason instead of having you looking on the outside looking in like you've been doing since 2007. That's point number one. Point number two, and more importantly, we can sit up there and we can talk about Tom Brady all we want to. We can look at Bruce Arians all we want to. Bruce Arians is 7-8-1, 8-8, 7-9 in his last three seasons as a head coach. We can't ignore that reality. And we also have to pay attention to what Tom Brady once said in the offseason last year. He said when people were talking about him or Belichick, who deserves the most credit, he abhorred that question because he said, I could not have done what I've done without Bill Belichick, but Bill Belichick could not have done it without me as well. In other words, one person has to coach, another person has to play. One person can't do both. So why the hell do y'all keep asking who deserves more credit when in fact we needed each other and we utilized each other to give a level or display a level of unprecedented success in NFL history? That's the bottom line.
Stephen A., thank you. I mean, listen, this is one of those situations where I would rather sit here today and say Tom Brady, who I've watched get things fixed for the majority of my life watching football, from one game to the next, from one season to the next, is going to continue to be that guy, Max Kellerman. It is not going to end with Brady, Tom Brady throwing Brady 30 picks and doing all of the things that you hoping he does so you can come on here and say Brady Tom Brady ain't that guy or he just the guy. We talking about a quarterback that's going to make this team better. You asking me?
Was it more Brady or Belichick? Real quick, guys, you just give me a name. Brady or Belichick? Who was it more?
I'm always more the players on the field. Tom Brady, I say that till the end of time.
Well, to me, I would say Belichick because as the coach, you're not just coaching offense, you're coaching defense and special teams. So he has more responsibility, whereas Tom Brady just has offense. But that doesn't take anything away from Tom Brady.
Of course, it's both of them. Of course, it's both of them. But if you answer the question, the answer is Belichick, pretty obviously.
All right, let's leave it there. Maxie? Sunday marked the first time since week 14 of 2017 that Tom Brady was sacked multiple times, had multiple interceptions. Marcus, I feel your pain too, man. I mean, I do. We'll see you on NFL Live a little later.
No, you don't,
Eastern,
Molly.
With the crew. Looking for, I do feel his
feel
pain.
Your own pain.
I do.
You feel your own
listen,
pain.
Listen, I listen.
No, no, no. You ain't got nothing to do with this.
Every day.
No. Your own pain,
producers
the Giants.
In my ear.
Don't sit up there and talk about.
Yeah.
You ain't got no pain from New England. It's the Giants that you're in pain.
I do. I
has
have
nothing
to
do with Tom Brady.
I have
None.
To listen to Max None. Spew this as well in disagreement and sit here silently and politely and get us to commercial break on time, which I'm going to do.
This
Molly,
right,
I got news for you. I got bad news for you. Are you ready for this, Molly?
What?
Are you ready for this, Molly?
Yeah.
You have on Pittsburgh Steelers colors.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Game 7 tonight, ESPN, Clippers, Nuggets, can't wait with a chance to face the Lakers Western Conference Finals. You know how bad, Stephen A., this Clippers team wants this. Paul George, Kawhi, they want that Battle of L.A. So tell me this, what does tonight mean for Kawhi?
As far as I'm concerned, everything. It's a legacy game for him. Not if he wins, but if he loses. This would be very, very bad for Kawhi Leonard. Listen, he had 25 and 8 and 5 the last game, but he was a relatively modest 8 of 18 from the field. He had key turnovers. He missed shots he normally makes. They made mistakes he normally wouldn't in this game 6. And let me tell you something right now. With Denver being down 3-1 and playing the way that they played, coming back to tie this series 3-3, This is the time. I don't know if Kawhi Leonard has ever been under more pressure than he is tonight. Max calls him the cyborg, no emotion, et cetera, et cetera. Well, he better show up. He better show up, because if he doesn't, the basketball world is going to look at him significantly differently than we looked at him in the past. I'm not talking about win or lose. I'm talking about he has to show up. He has to play his lights out, because the kind of pressure he is on tonight is the kind of pressure we have put LeBron James on throughout his career. This is the first time I can recall Kawhi Leonard being in this situation where all eyes are on him. Like, yo, bro, what you gonna do? You the one that left to Toronto, the world champion Toronto Raptors, to go to the Los Angeles Clippers. You're the one that insisted that you wanted Paul George as your teammate, who dropped 33, by the way, last game. Hit all 11 of his free throws, 4-9 from three-point range, even though he shot just 9 of 21 from the field, but still dropped 33. But he did his part. The point is, if you Kawhi Leonard, where you at? What you gonna do? Everybody's watching, because remember, in order for the Clippers to get Paul George, look at all those picks that they gave to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Not to mention giving up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the process. So I'm looking at it from this standpoint. Yo, man, Kawhi Leonard got to show up tonight. Michael Porter Jr., the Joker, Jokic, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris. Do you know, I mean, we talk about dudes other than Gary Harris shooting like 45% from the field. Jamal Murray shot 59% from the field. The Joker shot about 53% from the field. Michael Porter shot about 57% from the field. I mean, where's the defense? Where's the defense, Clippers? So, listen, Doc Rivers is absolutely right. It ain't about no damn pregame speech. You know what you need to do. You know you had no business being in this situation, but here you are. And Kawhi Leonard, the man that's averaged 39 minutes a game last postseason, was averaging over 37, 38 minutes this postseason, all right, was playing lights out until a couple of games ago, up 3-1. Now it's 3-3. You 48 minutes away. You going to win and go to your first and take the Clippers to their first conference finals ever? Or is this yet another time that the Clippers are going to fall short of making it to the conference finals? I can bring up Doc Rivers in the 7 years, but I love Doc Rivers. I think he's a great coach, but you got to get to the conference finals. I can bring up Paul George, but hell, he's been showing up. Kawhi Leonard, this last game, he didn't. He on the clock. We're all watching. This is a legacy game for Kawhi Leonard. Not if he wins, because we expect that, but if he loses and he doesn't play well, Max, everybody's going to be looking at him differently. And I, for one, I'm not going to be looking at him, Max. I'm going to be looking at you tomorrow morning. Ooh. Oh, I'll be here bright and early tomorrow morning. If Kawhi don't show up tonight, I'll be looking. I'm going to have an APB out on you from Twitter tonight, Max Kellerman, if Kawhi don't show up.
Well, that's right, because this is very simple. The history of the NBA is this. Among teams who get to a game seven, right? That means you're evenly matched. I don't want to hear about it. You get to a game seven, you're evenly matched. The team with the best player wins almost always. Almost always throughout the history of the NBA, especially the modern history, the team with the best player will win the game seven. Kawhi Leonard is supposed to be, according to me, the best player in the world. So he must win game seven. There's one out, Stephen A. There's one out. If the Nuggets were somehow to go on to not only beat the Clippers, but also the Lakers, then we'd have to revise what we say, because LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard are the two guys left standing, because Giannis can't do it in the playoffs, and KD is hurt. Two guys left standing for world supremacy in basketball are LeBron and Kawhi as individual players. And if Kawhi loses a game seven, LeBron is left standing alone, and he has either retained or regained his throne, depending on who you listen to. Because you might sit there and say, maybe rightfully, Max, you were always wrong. LeBron was, he never got anything taken from him. He was always the best. Maybe. But if the Nuggets go on to then beat the Lakers, now we have to have a different conversation. And this is a funky kind of year in the bubble. Weird things are happening. That said, that's in the future. Tonight, there's only one thing. Kawhi Leonard must be the best player on the floor, and if he is, the Clippers will win, and if he's not, they will lose, and I will have to shut up about Kawhi at least until the next series, depending on what happens there.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In college football, Ohio State's Buckeyes quarterback Justin Fields would have been one of the Heisman frontrunners heading into the season if the Big Ten had not voted to postpone its fall sports due to coronavirus concerns. The presidents and chancellors reportedly met this past Sunday but did not vote on starting the fall football season. After hearing updated medical information, a formal vote is expected in the next few days, sources have told ESPN. Paging the mouth of the South, the mouth of all things college football, our friend Paul Feinbaum. Paul, always good to see you. I hope I get to see you in person sometime in the near future. Okay, obviously we're dealing with all this craziness. These meetings are happening. Tell me this. Do you think we'll actually see Big Ten football this fall, Paul?
Molly, the fact that we're having a conversation about this would indicate that we probably will. I mean, this is the strangest thing that any of us have seen in a long time. On August 11th, the Big Ten shut down. A week later, the commissioner of the Big Ten, Kevin Warren, said, we're done. And now here, 5 weeks to the day, there seems to be a sense that they're coming back. And the obvious question, what has changed? What has changed is rapid testing has improved the ability to conduct proper testing. And there's also less of a concern about myocarditis, which seemingly shut the Big Ten down in the first place.
Is it possible, Paul, that they're watching SEC action, even though the ACC with Virginia and Virginia Tech was postponed? They're seeing other Big Five conferences take place, that they're saying to themselves, what the hell are we doing? Because if they're just playing against one another and it's still seen as a credible football season, why can't we do the same? How much does that factor into the equation in terms of them potentially changing their mind about having a football season?
Stephen A., I think you just asked the right question. Remember what happened after the Big Ten shut down. You saw protests. Justin Fields went on social media and got a couple hundred thousand petitions signed. Players' fathers showed up at Big Ten headquarters. The pressure has been withering, and the Big Ten has had no answer. It was one thing when no football was being played, but now we're entering the third weekend of college football, and there are problems. Listen, Texas Tech has had 75 COVID cases. It's not a perfect situation. Cancellations have occurred. But football is being played, and within reason, it seems to be going fairly well. And really, I think the most important thing is we are now through a weekend of the NFL, and it seems like it went off without a hitch. And that has just added to the pressure on the Big Ten, and it's also attacked their credibility. Well, they're sitting at home, and everything else is going on. And the reason why you're hearing this October 17th date, if the Big Ten can get back by then, they may still be eligible for the college football playoff, which is pretty important when you consider they have one of the two or three best teams in the country with Ohio State.
Paul, I agree with that analysis about the more plentiful testing now. People forget how much things are changing. A couple months ago, you couldn't get your hands on a test, and now the tests are much more readily accessible. And so let's assume that the Big Ten does play. What does the late start mean? How's it going to affect the season and the playoff?
Well, what you're going to have is fewer games. Right now, everyone is playing either 10 or 11 games. Some are not getting that many in. The Big Ten would likely be talking about 7 or 8 games. I talked to a commissioner in the Power Five the other day, and he said if they can get 7 or 8, we'll do it. And clearly, the Big Ten is the Big Ten. I know if you're in the West Coast where there will not be football, at least until November, you're not very happy about this. But college football is a lot more diverse with the Big Ten because of Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan. There's some amazingly big games coming from that league. They also satisfy the television networks, which will make them happy. So I think the college football playoff will wait. They can't wait any longer. And another caveat here, Max, if the Big Ten starts on October 17th, and they need to make that decision today or tomorrow, you can't wait any longer to get everybody back within a month, then if you have postponements of significant proportion, it could really upset the apple cart. But I don't think the college football playoff wants to delay to wait for anyone else to show up. They have to do it now.
Paul Feinbaum, as we sit here talking about college football, there's obviously a lot that we can point out that is wrong. There's a lot of fingers of blame to a lot of people to point fingers of blame at. Is there anybody, and I mean anybody, in college football who is doing something right at this particular moment in time? Anybody?
Well, I think there are. Stephen A., I think there are a number of schools, but I will point to your friend Nick Saban, quite frankly. While almost every coach has done something, no one is as important as he is. And what he did 2 weeks ago, standing with his players, marching in Tuscaloosa at Foster Auditorium, which was the scene 50 or 60 years ago of the former governor George Wallace, literally standing in the schoolhouse door to stop a black student from being the first at Alabama. That, to me, is one of the most significant developments of the offseason.
Paul, let's talk Heisman. Who other than Trevor Lawrence is in the running this season?
Well, if Ohio State plays, I think Justin Fields would be his biggest competitor. After that, it's open. Spencer Rattler, a great name for a Heisman winner if there's ever been one, looked brilliant for Lincoln Riley. That's not a big surprise considering he's had three consecutive finalists and two of the last three winners at OU. I think Ellinger from Texas is someone to keep your eye on. Also, Travis Etienne from Clemson on Trevor's own team could be a threat because he is that good. He's one of the best running backs in the country. And I'd also throw Najee Harris in from the University of Alabama. He is going to have a monster year.
Paul Feinbaum, I'm going to veer away from college football and veer left to ask you this particular question. Baker Mayfield played again this Sunday. Wasn't the greatest performance this Sunday. Got romped by the Baltimore Ravens. You've had your feelings about Baker Mayfield, the former Heisman Trophy winner under Lincoln Riley, who's the number one overall pick. Kyler Murray obviously is a Heisman Trophy winner right after and a number one pick as well. But they seem to be moving in two different directions. Your thoughts about those guys watching them this Sunday, because I know you did.
Yeah, and Steve and I don't—we've had many conversations about Baker Mayfield. I've never been crazy about him, and you know, he's almost become to me what the Cowboys are to you. I don't have the big hat to wear. I don't have the Twitter following that you do, but I'm thinking about it every time he has a bad game, which is pretty much every time he plays. I'm thinking about using your social media account and literally going crazy. It's not my nature, but because he has been, he's hard to cheer for. And it looks like Cleveland is as big a mess this year as it was last year, which it was the year before. And some things just never change, do they?
True story. All facts there by you, Paul. I also want to mention quickly, before we say goodbye to you, the Pac-12, apparently maybe mid-November, we could be seeing a return. That's the most aggressive Heather Dinich reporting that. Paul, quickly, do you think that's actually a reality?
No, they have much bigger problems than the Big Ten. And unfortunately, some of it is the environment. I mean, the forest fires would have canceled the Ohio State-Oregon game this past weekend. They have much stricter ordinances out there. So I think that's aspirational right now for the Big Ten. They do have the testing protocol, which helps them, but they have more serious problems than the Big Ten.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.